Well, our theme for 2025, we have a new theme. It is live like Jesus. And it comes out of a simple desire to follow Jesus and to learn better what that means. You may remember in one of my messages, I think it was November, we went to 1 John 2, verse 6. Whoever says he abides in him ought to walk in the same way in which he walked. We ought to live like Jesus. The last few years we've had some themes. Remember Life in the Spirit, 2023, living at the intersection of heavenly reality and earthly reality. And then 2024, I wanted to take more of an active stance with that. The theme was possessing the land. This theme really kind of follows in with those two when we're talking about living like Jesus. I'm just trying to get real practical with that. Now, normally, I preach at least two expository sermon series per year. I'll do an Old Testament book, and I'll do a New Testament book or a part of a book. Last summer, you remember, I did a summer series on the Lord's Prayer. And just, you know, wanted to slow down and go through things a little bit more intently. Well, it was while I was doing research on that series in the Lord's Prayer that I came across the Bible Project podcast on the Sermon on the Mount. The Bible Project, I don't know how many of you know the Bible Project. One guy's a Bible scholar and the other guy would draw pictures to it. And well, now they have a whole team and they do videos and it's multiple languages. It's a great podcast. I love listening to it. Anyway, they took most of last year to go through the Sermon on the Mount. And it was awesome. Just some great stuff there. Well, it was while they were going through that I kind of got this idea. What if instead of doing an Old Testament series and a New Testament series, what if we just spent the entire year in the Gospel of Matthew? Now, Matthew is filled with lots of Old Testament references, so those of you who love Old Testament, we will be getting our Old Testament diet in the book of Matthew. But I wanted to just, what does it look like to see life from Jesus' perspective? And Matthew gives us Jesus' perspective, and he contrasts it with the religious expectations of the Jews of his day. Now, we're going to begin this study in Matthew, again, with just a short portion of one of the books of Matthew, Matthew 5, verses 1 to 12, that summarizes Matthew's gospel. Just like we did with the Lord's Prayer, we're going to take this slowly and we're going to spend time going verse by verse and meditating on it. And then throughout the year, we're going to expand out. We're going to move to the rest of the gospel, unfolding the greater vision. Live like Jesus means aligning our minds, our hearts, and our actions with His. So we're going to start the year with an alignment. Isn't it good to get an alignment, Jason? Right? Yeah, we're going to do our spiritual alignment. So Matthew 5 through 7 contains the text referred to as the Sermon on the Mount. Just three chapters in Matthew, but the beginning passage is the one I want to focus on, and most commonly called the Beatitudes. So this is the Beatitudes. Matthew 5, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain," which is why it's called the Sermon on the Mount, "and when he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Now, this is called the Beatitudes because there are eight statements that each begin with the word bless. Now, most of us don't know Latin, so beatitude and blessed, trust me, they go together, okay? But we're going to spend a week on each statement. Yes, that means we are going to spend the first 2 months of this year just on this passage. But I think it's worth spending that time because these verses are going to give us that alignment, help us to realign ourselves with God's perspective so that when we move through the rest of the book, we have this as a foundation. Jesus opens the Sermon on the Mount with eight statements about the good life. But the good life is not what you think it is. Now, when I say the good life, our thoughts go towards what? A life of luxury, right? Having a nice big bank account, or maybe a nice car, or for me, I would say a nice truck. Okay? Maybe some people are into clothes. The good life for you would be a shopping spree, one where you don't look at the price tags, right? Maybe it's eating at nice restaurants, going to big ticket shows. Maybe it's taking vacations to exotic places. Yeah, I could get into that too. Whatever you may think the good life is, that's not what Jesus is talking about. You already knew I was going to say that. You can live the good life and live within your means, right? Even if you don't have very much. I would even say, especially if you don't have very much. Because Jesus is going to turn everything you think you know about the good life upside down. And that is how we learn to live like Jesus. So, first of all, let's talk about living the good life. I put the good life in quotes. So, in the Bible Project podcast, the lead scholar there, Tim Mackey, notes that Jesus was drawing on a long tradition of wisdom literature when he refers to blessing, or I'm calling blessing the good life. So, for thousands of years, people have wanted to know how to live a good life, one that is blessed by God. Now, when we use terms like blessing, sometimes, especially in the church, we tend to use blessed as like equal to prosperity, or maybe happiness. But you know, if Jesus wanted to say, this is how to be truly happy, then good Greek scholars tell us there would have been a better way of saying that. There's another Greek word that just means to be happy or joyful. Baruch, as a matter of fact, where Carrie lived, they still say that today. That's what it means to be happy or joyful. But the word that Jesus used was not that word. And it calls to mind numerous references in the Old Testament that were translated in the Greek Old Testament by this particular word. One of those is Psalms 1. We're going to spend some time in Psalm 1. Psalm 1, verses 1 and 2. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners. I hear some of you have this memorized. Nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. Now, remember how we said in Advent when we talked about peace, that peace is not the absence of conflict, right? But it's the presence of God. Well, in that series, I defined peace as the way things ought to be. Well, the Bible's concept of blessing is like that too. You see, this guy in Psalm 1 is not just described as happy, but what does it say? He specifically delights in God's law. That's what makes him happy. Guess what? He's not without problems. He's not without people bothering him, but he doesn't give in to them, right? He's not carefree, but he's diligent. Now, that's what the Bible calls blessed. You see, the biblical concept of blessing has everything to do with how we live and very little to do with how we feel. So, somebody says to you, you walk into church and somebody says to you, how are you doing? And you respond, I'm blessed, right? You know, you can say that regardless of how you feel, and you're not lying, because to be blessed is to be living a certain way, not necessarily feeling a certain way. It's not a feeling, it's more of a state of mind. Now, as we break this down, here's your first fill in the blank. The good life, or a good life, leads to human flourishing. Let's pick up in verse 3. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. In all he does, he prospers. So blessing is about flourishing, things being the way they are supposed to be and doing what they are supposed to do. And the word flourish is a plant word, right? It comes from this analogy of a tree, like in Psalm 1. For a tree, flourishing means that the roots go down and they find nutrients, right? And they draw on those nutrients to produce growth. And that growth eventually leads to bearing fruit. And bearing fruit means there contains a seed, which is going to repeat the cycle all over again. So, when we think about the question, how am I doing? What if we thought of it in terms of flourishing? Am I flourishing? Am I able to draw the strength that I need for the day? Do I have the ability to draw life from a network of relationships and activities? Do I know that I'm loved by God and by others? Am I able to find goodness in my surroundings and beauty? Does what I think about, does it keep me engaged? Does it keep me fascinated, intrigued, or maybe even amused? Am I able to turn meaningful thoughts into effective actions? Am I able to find satisfaction in what I do, making a significant contribution with my time and my effort? You see, all of those things have to do with flourishing. Human flourishing is more than just a good feeling. In the same way that blessing is a lot more than just prosperity. It may, in fact, include what we typically think of as prosperity, but it may not. But it is prospering in the sense that prospering means growing, actively growing. So let's look at it from another angle. Here's another fill in the blank. A good life is doing what is right. Let's continue in verse 4. The wicked are not so. They are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. So the biblical definition of blessing includes righteousness, doing things God's way. And the person who appears to prosper but does not do things God's way, they're not going to have a lasting prosperity. In other words, you could say they're not truly blessed. Blessing, unlike happiness, is not something that changes with the wind. Blessing is substantive. It will stand the test of time and circumstances. Blessing holds up under close scrutiny. If you're blessed, it's not just a passing thing. You aren't blessed one day and not blessed the next. The blessed life is something that you cultivate. You work at it by determining to do things God's way. And blessing comes from developing consistency in doing things God's way. And that is righteousness, and it's also blessing. Now, I would be amiss if I didn't also mention that our righteousness as Christians does not just come from what we do. Well, it comes first and foremost from what Jesus Christ did. Jesus Christ is our righteousness. It says in 1 Corinthians 1:30, "And because of him you are in Christ Jesus, who what? Who became to us wisdom from God, righteousness, sanctification, and redemption." You don't have to be good enough because Jesus is good enough. And what we do in terms of living a righteous life, doing things his way, is what we do in response to what he has done for us. And that applies to blessing as well. To be blessed is to be highly favored. Have you ever heard that? I'm blessed and highly favored. You know what? Those two terms go together. His favor is his blessing. That's how he looks at us. And when we get hold of that truth, that I am blessed and highly favored, God looks at me, he loves me, he favors me, and that's why I'm blessed. When we get hold of that truth and get it deep down in our spirit, you know what? We begin to act like it. And that's when we can say that we are truly blessed. So the one verse that we want to look at today is Matthew 5:3. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." So Jesus says we are blessed when we are poor in spirit. He didn't say poor and miserable. He said poor in spirit, right? But in order to understand what Jesus is saying, well, we might need to redefine what is poor and what is rich. So let's talk about finding treasure. This is the second part of your outline. If you're following along in your bulletin insert, or for those of you online, if you're following along in your e-bulletin, we're going to get to the rest of the Sermon on the Mount later in the spring. But right now, it's important to look ahead a little bit because we want to see how Jesus defines true riches. So I'm going to go to a passage that we're going to be talking about later, but I want to cover it a little bit here. Where does Jesus say that we find treasure? I'm going to take you to Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 and 20. Where, what's that? Yeah, that's right. He says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal." So this, of course, was part of the podcast on the Sermon on the Mount. And when Tim Mackey does that podcast, he points out that the word that is translated treasure is actually, it's kind of a funny word. It really just refers to stuff that people collect, stuff that we gather. There is no inherent value in the term itself other than the fact that people seem to want to keep it and store it up. And that leads to an observation. Here's your next fill in the blank. Your treasure is whatever you value, right? What Matthew calls treasure is the stuff that we all gather, swag. You familiar with the term swag, right? It's that free stuff that companies give away to thank their employees or to attract new customers. It's an acronym for stuff that we all get, right? Have you heard that? Everybody wants to work for the company that has the best swag. Swag is also a slang for people who dress nice or carry themselves in a certain way, you know, like, yo, man, you got swag, right? Well, your treasure is the stuff we all gather. You know what I'm talking about. Look down in your basement or up in your attic. Check the top shelf of your closet, or maybe it's all piled in the corner of your living room. It may or may not have any monetary value, but it's valuable to you, or it wouldn't be there, right? It may be ironic to refer to the stuff that we all gather as treasure, but guess what? That's your treasure. Well, Jesus presents an alternative to hoarding. You know what it is? It's heavenly hoarding. And it's guaranteed not to spoil. It cannot diminish in value. Collect stuff in heaven. Literally, hoard your stuff in heaven, like in the sky. Now, before I talk about what it means to be, before I talk more about what that means, let me go to what poor in spirit means. Now, many commentaries will say that poor in spirit means being spiritually humble, keeping a low profile, so to speak, spiritually. Be humble, right? Or on the other hand, you have another set of commentaries that says, well, poor in spirit, don't over-spiritualize it. It just means to be poor, right? Like, you're blessed if you're literally poor. If you're poor, well, then you're spiritually rich. So that's what it means to be poor in spirit. Well, I'll tell you, none of those actually seems quite right to me. I like what Tim Mackey says. He translates the phrase poor in spirit. He says, it's the powerless. Now, why does he say it's the powerless? Well, it comes from an understanding in Eastern thought, and the Bible is an Eastern book, that a person's spirit is their life force. It's their personal energy, like this guy here, you know. Tim Mackey calls it your vibe. A person who is poor in spirit lacks that vibe, lacks that personal energy. More than that, the person who has no options, they can't assert themselves. They're severely limited in the expression of who they are. They are, practically speaking, powerless. And this is where Jesus flips the whole idea of being poor or powerless on its head. Because the next fill in the blank. We said that our treasure is what we value, but then our values come from our desires. Our values come from our desires. So let me go back to the stuff that we all just talked about. That stuff that's piled in your attic, in your basement, or maybe even in your living room. What makes that stuff valuable? The fact that you want it. That's what makes it valuable. What if you could change what you want? Well, in that case, I would just get rid of it, right? Or most of it. Now we're getting somewhere. You see? Because if you didn't want it or need it, it wouldn't be important. Now, the point of my message is not to make you go home and clean out your garage. But if that's the impact that it has on you, you're blessed if you do, okay? But the point of blessed are the poor in spirit is the second part of the verse, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So in other words, your desires are misplaced if you think that earthly stuff is more important than heavenly stuff. You see? After all, you can't take it with you. And let me just tell you that the people that you're planning on leaving it to probably don't want it as much as you do. So what is important? Things that have eternal value. 1 John 2:24 and 25. What you have heard from the beginning is to remain in you. If what you have heard from the beginning remains in you, then you will remain in the Son and in the Father. And this is the promise that he himself made to us, eternal life. That is heavenly hoarding. Treasuring every moment with God. Remembering everything that God has spoken. Cherishing every moment spent in his presence. Holding on to every truth that you learn as if it were a precious gem. You want to collect something? Collect the fruit of the Spirit. Get the whole set, right? Desire spiritual gifts. Work tirelessly at refining it like you would at fixing up that old car, like it's a piece of fine art. Sow seeds of kindness and generosity, just like you would buy stock. You can invest in kindness. You can invest in generosity. And believe me, it pays big dividends there. What it essentially means is that the powerless are not really powerless. You may not be able to control your circumstances. In first century Israel, when Jesus is speaking to this audience, you know, they could not vote. They didn't have a vote. In fact, most of those people did not have any choice as to their job or career. Most of those people did not have access to education. They didn't travel. They didn't have any means of changing their social situation. But you can change. You can change what you desire. And what you desire changes what you value. And when you set your sights on this invisible kingdom beyond the skies, not only does it exist beyond the skies, but Jesus is right here with us to tell us about it. And we start to listen to Jesus. We start to store up the things that he's saying. And we just store them away, even the things that we don't understand yet. Okay, Jesus, I don't understand that yet, but I'm going to remember that. I'm going to meditate on that until I get it. And you notice that his truths, the things that he says, they're like precious gems. You want to just take them out every once in a while and look at them. And you tuck them away in your heart, and guess what? Nobody can take them from you. And no one would even suspect that you have anything at all of value because, after all, They think you're powerless. If poor in spirit really does mean powerless, then there is so much irony in Jesus' statement. Because the so-called powerless people are the new owner investors in the kingdom of God. Let's talk about power. This last section is called Redefining Power. And for it, I want to spend some time in Psalm 34. I encourage you, if you have your Bibles open, read the whole psalm, but I'm only going to focus on a few parts of it. It's a wonderful psalm to reflect on, especially if you are feeling powerless. Psalm 34, verses 15 to 19 says, "The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears toward their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all." So you may not feel like you have options, like you're stuck in circumstances that you don't want, you don't like, but guess what? You have a place of appeal. God, who created the world and everything in it, guess what? He's still in control. And when I say God is in control, that can be a little bit misleading. You know why? Because even though he's in control, most often he doesn't. God doesn't control everybody and everything. But God does intervene sometimes, in some ways, especially when things are out of control. And the psalmist reminds us that those who think they are in control, well, God is watching. Here's the next fill in the blank. Worldly power is an illusion. Listen to what the psalmist says, verse 21. "Affliction will slay the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be condemned. The Lord redeems the life of his servants. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned." Everyone's held accountable for their actions. You know, there are powerful people in this world who believe that they are the masters of their own destiny. And they're partly right. Money, power, influence can go a long way. But God is also watching. And he's not unconcerned. And he's not uninvolved. But here's what I've found about God. God is extremely patient. And he will often allow evil to go on for much longer than we think it should. Now, why does he do that? Because he also wants people to see the natural consequences of their actions. If he were to intervene too soon, people would think, well, I did that, right? Or I'm okay. Sometimes it's best to just let things play out. Let evil be seen for what evil really is. Now, I'm not the only one who thinks this way. Augustine of Hippo, by the way, that's a place, not an animal. One of the early Christian most influential theologians, he grappled with the existence of evil. And he concluded that God allows evil to exist not as a force of chaos, but as a necessary part of free will, enabling us to choose what is good. And that teaches us that the presence of evil ultimately points to a loving God who desires authentic relationships. We also see this attitude in Jesus, who rather than seizing power, he laid his life down. And he gave us an example to follow. Philippians 2, 5 to 8 says, you must have the same attitude that Jesus Christ had. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God, and he died a criminal's death on a cross. You could even say that Jesus became poor in spirit. And actually, it doesn't matter how you interpret poor in spirit, whether it's humility, poverty, or powerlessness, Jesus became all three. You say, well, when did Jesus become powerless? Well, it says he had power and he gave it up voluntarily. So he became powerless, but he wasn't actually powerless. Or he was, but he was so voluntarily. And by doing that, guess what? He empowered each one of us. So how do we do this? How do we receive the kingdom of God? Well, we become like Jesus. We live like Jesus. We emulate and reflect him. And that leads to the next fill in the blank. So worldly power is an illusion, but heavenly power is a reflection. Let's look at verses 4 and 5 in Psalm 34. I sought the Lord and he answered me, and he delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. The psalmist says, I sought the Lord and he heard me. So we begin by seeking the Lord. And guess what? That's what we're doing this week. We're beginning a week of prayer and fasting at the beginning of the new year, and we're going to begin by seeking the Lord. And you may come into this week and you may feel like you're powerless to do anything about your circumstances, but guess what? No one can stop you from telling God about it. No one can stop you from seeking him. And no one can prevent him from hearing and answering. And it also says that those who look to him are radiant. When you turn to God for his answer, your face begins to reflect his light. And you are not empowered by your circumstances. You are empowered by him. That's where your power comes from. Recall the biblical figure of Esther. She was powerless. She was an orphan, faced with monumental changes, yet she rose to the occasion. Why? Because she trusted God's plan for her life. And when the fate of her people hung in the balance, she stepped out in faith. She cried out to the Lord. She sought him, and he answered. And just like Esther, we remember that our circumstances don't have to limit us. But God's empowerment equips us to accomplish great things, regardless of where we started. See, powerless doesn't mean powerless before him. You are not powerless. You belong to God. And that means that everything he has is yours. You're only powerless, humanly speaking. But 1 Peter 1:3 says this, By his divine power, God has given us everything that we need for living a godly life. We have received all of this by coming to know him. And the one who called us to himself by means of his marvelous glory and excellence. So when we think about the good life, you know, we're always tempted to think, you know, if I just had a little more, then I would have the good life. The truth is that the good life was never about having more. It's about using what you have, right? Matthew 13, 12 says this, "For the one who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away from him." And I'm thinking to myself, Jesus, why are you saying this? That's not fair. It's never about being fair. It's about where your resources are, where your desires are, what's going on with you. Until you learn to be satisfied with what you already have, guess what? You won't be satisfied with more. If you can't handle what you have, you won't be able to handle more. The truth is, the good life is found in what you already have. You already have the good life. And I'm telling you, if you have Jesus, you have the good life. Being poor in spirit, whether you interpret that as poverty, humility, powerlessness, I'm not going to debate about those right now. The truth is that none of that disqualifies you. In fact, it may qualify you. Why? Because it makes you look to him, right? And when you look to him, you have everything that you need. Pat, if you come, here's some questions for reflection this week. How are you doing? It's the first question. I mean it, how are you doing? I mean, I know I said I kind of attacked your stuff a little bit, you know, and that can be unsettling, but how are you doing? Are you blessed? Can you say that even though you may be powerless to change your circumstances? Can you still say I'm blessed? And if you can't, I want to ask you one more thing. Where does blessing come from? Where does it come from? Yeah. Number two, are you poor in spirit? When Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit," do you right away say, "Yeah, that's me"? Or are you like, "Yeah, I don't know what that means"? Is that something we should aspire to? I mean, this is a serious question. They debate it quite a bit on the podcast. Is poor in spirit something we should even aspire to? Or is it something that people normally do not choose for themselves? Jesus would say to us, he would say to you, you know, this path you're on, this circumstance that you have, you may not have chosen it, but you can choose your attitude. Number three, is the kingdom of heaven yours? Are you an owner investor in the kingdom of heaven? Have you cried to the Lord? And has he heard you and delivered you? You say, well, maybe not lately, but he has in the past. Good, remember that. That'll give you faith for the present. Does your face reflect his radiance? And how does looking to heaven help you to live the good life on the earth? Let's stand, worship the Lord as we reflect on these things.